Welcome back to the Digital Orthopedics Podcast, and today we are super excited to talk to Gabe Jones, CEO and co-founder of Proprio. Proprio is one of the most interesting companies we visited with at DocSF this year. Super excited to hear more about the details of how this company got started. I'm not going to give you too much information about it. It's just super interesting technology, leveraging the cutting edge of computer vision in surgical applications. So welcome, Gabe, to the DocSF podcast.
I'm super excited to be here, Dr. Beeny. Thank you so much.
By the way, I want to tell the audience that your presentation at DocSF was a masterclass in how to utilize 8 minutes on stage the most effectively possible. You got the audience engaged. Everybody was super hyper-focused on your talk, and you just handled it super well. Congratulations on that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, my focus was on, as is yours, on the community and the excitement that brings them to DocSF and should keep them coming back and telling everyone about it. So yeah, I'm very invested in the community and looking for ways to support further, certainly.
Okay, Gabe, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you become the CEO of this company?
Yeah, the 30-second version of that is I've always been fascinated by engineering, law, how business works, finance, and of course, medicine. And when you look back at a life and a career, I'm sure like your own journey, Stefano, it all makes sense from a chapter to chapter perspective. I went over here looking into engineering. So I worked in engineering, just-in-time manufacturing, the Toyota methodology in Japan. I wanted to really understand that. So I studied Japanese, got an engineering degree, and moved to Japan, as one does, right? Ended up working in a top engineering firm over there called Taisei, their only non-Japanese employee. Got on the factory floor, watched how automation and just-in-time manufacturing was actually working, literally boots on the ground, came back to the United States. And that, of course, took me into, logically, a career in patent law and IP and international trade. And so where do you go to do that? I mean, yeah, exactly, as one does. So I moved to Washington, D.C. and spent the better part of a decade really understanding how our system works at that legal regulatory level, worked with everyone from the Supreme Court and the Capitol building, the justice system, international trade law, you name it. And sort of logically, if you follow the progression, where do you go from there? Well, how do things get paid for and financed? Next step is, of course, Wall Street. So moved to New York City for a few years and was part of buy side and sell side deals in the multiple billions, hundreds of millions of dollars. Experienced the 2007 to 2009 financial crisis. So how do systems perform under crisis is actually a really valuable lesson too. Do they work? Do they continue to function? And then after learning a lot there, my next logical step was I saw what the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and Muhammad Yunus was doing with mobile and microfinance. And, you know, again, 2007 to 2009, that's the launch of the iPhone, which began as this promise that Steve Jobs and the team made, and then started to just roll through and impact all of technology, all of connectivity, supercomputer in your pocket. And so I was personally motivated to do well and do good. So I thought I'd go knock on the door of Bill and Melinda Gates and figure out a way to work with them at scale with technology impacting hopefully billions of people to help them get out of poverty, but also get access to the knowledge and healthcare that 80% of humanity doesn't have adequate access to. I know that's part of your mission as well, is the access and quality of care. So I moved back to Seattle very entrepreneurially, just thinking, I'm going to knock on the door of Bill Gates. I'll find out where that door is and eventually get there. Did a master's in business at University of Washington to gain some access. Ended up working for Bill for 4.5 years on special projects, which was fascinating and actually brought me into contact with Dr. Sam Brown at Seattle Children's Hospital, which is the origin story of Proprio. And I think we'll get to that in a moment. The T concept was from a physician saying, I use a neurosurgical microscope in cranial cases to do this, and I use navigation systems over here to do this in spine. So a neurosurgeon doing both cranial and spine procedures and saying the neurosurgical microscope doesn't give me the three-dimensional perception that I feel I need. Imagine a craniotomy, right? That sort of separation from the physical body as you're operating like this. And then in spine, you know, doing complex cervical procedures, tumor procedures that are just very three-dimensional by nature in terms of the problem, but the tools don't really update in real time in 3D. So that was the original problem or opportunity statement for Proprio.
I just finished a 6-month tour around the world. And in the process, I interviewed individuals pushing the healthcare models in various countries. Then I launched a series of podcasts called the DocSF Digital Innovators Podcast, and I selected the 10 most interesting stories. The through story for all of them, that each of them went overseas when they were young to push the ideas and the boundaries of their thinking, and then came back often with novel approaches that actually led them to make significant change. Very consistent. I want to push you a little bit on the problem statement. You stated that the surgeon was unable to visualize his operative field in three dimensions in a way that would enable him to do the work he needed to do. But that's a process problem. What is the actual problem that can be solved if you did have three-dimensional visualization better than before?
It's a great question. As humans, we're designed to operate in 3D. I mean, even the name of the company is proprioception for a reason. The three-dimensional perception of the human body in its context is why we named it that. And it signals to surgeons that this is a company that's all about enhanced perception. So we looked at the neurosurgical microscopes from Zeiss, et cetera, which, you know, they're expert ground glass manufacturing companies, essentially, right? 100 years old or more, and they're very good at that. But the fundamental solution that they're offering to the problem, if you will, is one that's based on essentially a 2.5D representation of the world, right? We have two cameras in our heads plus a supercomputer attached to it, which is our brain. And we've figured out how to fill in the gaps for true volumetric 3D information, which is what the surgeon really wants, is the most accurate and complete representation of the part of the anatomy that they're interacting with, but really trying to fix. So in a craniotomy case, for example, taking a microscope that has one or two camera systems in it to try to present a more complete picture of the brain, which is soft tissue inside of a heart shell. And you're opening up a craniotomy and you're pointing one or two cameras in there, and you have the problem of brain shift, which is that soft tissue moves when you open up the cranium and the dura around it. So if you're trying to go in and find a tumor or an aneurysm and appropriately clip it when you can't see the structure on the other side, no amount of surface-based imaging, one-dimensional, two-dimensional, 2.5, is really going to help you with that problem of how do I see around corners and know what's on the other side of that tumor? What's the structure I'm actually getting to? And so that problem is super interesting from a computational standpoint. How do we get the right pre- and intraoperative data to be able to represent and render in 3D in the most helpful way for the surgeon? As computer scientists and engineers and curious people with a growth mindset, we love problems like that.
So to me, that seems that to answer my own question this way, after you've explained it, is that you're really going after minimizing complications, because at the end of the day, neurosurgery is millimeter sensitive. If you take out the wrong tissue, somebody could go blind or lose the ability to speak. Mm-hmm. But let's talk a bit more about the tech itself. So how did you solve this question of how to create a 2.5D / 3D visualization of a three-dimensional structure?
Yeah, the way that we think about it is we want 100% of all of the information that's relevant to the surgeon and the outcome, right? That's going to drive the better outcome and reduce complications, as you said. Getting 100% of the data is challenging, but there's lots of different approaches to it. We thought about fundamental technologies that could make other technologies, other tools more valuable. So we looked at the math of three-dimensional reconstruction. So think like gaming engines for 3D visualization of really complex scenes. And that math is fairly well explored. So we went and looked at Unity and Unreal engines. And how do they render the light in a scene for making a movie or making a video game? Because effectively, they're creating from whole cloth a complete three-dimensional scene. Now, that's computationally very expensive. You need lots of GPUs and things to do that. So it becomes an equation where in the math of calculating that whole 3D scene and rendering it for you, the surgeon, in real time, it's not how many cameras or sensors we can put. It's actually how few we can put in the operating room to render the most complete 3D volume for you to make decisions and then change the anatomy and see those updates in real time. So it becomes this trade-off between computational complexity and expense of computation. How long does it take? And how can we get the most complete picture of the three-dimensional scene? I'll film a video game rendering, et cetera. We found the sweet spot of all of that. And as a company, have a ton of IP around that, both in the form of patents and software and trade secrets and things. And we want that technology now to be applicable for many, many types of surgery, from all orthopedic surgery to soft tissue as well, because we believe it should be democratized. It should be on other companies' robots. It should be in all sorts of different applications, because we feel like we've discovered the secret of how to do real-time three-dimensional rendering of both the 3D volume that we capture with our cameras and sensors and what we call the right tool for the right job. So where X-ray or ultrasound, or MRI or CT is the right type of data to augment that 3D environment, let's go get it. And the surgeon can give us the feedback of, okay, the CT is optimal for this. We can replace the CT with an MRI here, thus reducing radiation exposure. And essentially going through that sequence of taking the right tool for the right job, embedding it in a real-time 3D environment.
So let's describe what a surgeon would see in the operating room. I'm looking at this video on your website. I encourage people to go to appropriatevision.com to look at this. But there is above the surgical field, there is a camera head, which it looks like has four separate cameras. And then the surgeon's looking at a screen, and there's a 3D model of the spine. Mm-hmm. So this platform is image requires a CT or MRI to begin with. Is that correct?
It can function like an exoscope because it has high definition video cameras. There's actually 10 plus sensors in there. So you could just run it like an exoscope with 3 to potentially 7 or 8 or even more times magnification. Mm-hmm. And it's got robotics integrated into it. And so we've coded it so that the array can move around dynamically over the operative field. And keep in mind, all of this is miniaturizable. So the future state is miniaturized on headset, miniaturized on endoscope, on robotics platforms, and integrated based on what the right tool for the right job is. But the cameras and sensors are optimized to capture and present in real time three types of information. So to have 3D volumetric presentation for you as a surgeon to use, you need three-dimensional information. So it's got real-time infrared depth sensing, which means it's not subject to lighting in the operating room. This is important for optical systems. It's also got embedded high-definition video cameras for that exoscope magnification, but also keep in mind the way that we view it is every pixel of information in the anatomy in the three-dimensional scene can be valuable to you as a surgeon. So we want color information for things like tissue differentiation, right? The depth and shading of the scene. So there's embedded high-def video cameras. And then the third layer is real-time tracking. So there are multiple tracking cameras in there, more than any navigation system that I'm aware of. And why that's important is it can see from lots of different angles. And the more complex the surgery, the more instruments, the more implants are used. It's the most sophisticated system for tracking all of those instruments in real time. And this starts to foreshadow all the data collection that's happening in every proprioparadigm surgery. So simply being able to say, we can track all your instruments, we can see the efficiency or inefficiency of handoffs, all that's in a three-dimensional longitudinal data set. What would you like to know? This is building towards the future where essentially this will be a queryable system, like an LLM-based system, a large language model, where you can query the data set from every surgery that's been performed with Propria over time and say, what's the most efficient workflow for this type of surgery? This is the brass ring, the holy grail that we're moving towards. And I think if you went back to the origin story of the company, it was, how do we get the right data for the surgeon, not overwhelm them and allow them to have, you know, be enabled with the right data to make the right decisions to reduce complications and improve outcomes.
So just to summarize a little bit, that you've created a data capture system, which is focused primarily on visual data, but multiple versions of it. So you can actually capture the infrared, you got multiple angles. You've leveraged your AI capabilities to synthesize the most relevant data. So that's the only thing that's available to a certain visual field is things that they can use real time. And that's been shown to be very effective because it actually is useful data as opposed to distracting. And secondly, you've got the ability to both leverage this technology in isolation or in context with imaging such as CTs or MRIs to provide three-dimensional volumetric data to the field of view. On top of that, you've taken the capability of tracking they built into the system to actually inform the surgeon where the instruments are, how many steps they're taking, how much better they're doing.
So if I were to say, like, what's the holy grail of all surgery? It's complete real-time three-dimensional information and modeling for the surgeon to be able to have all the information they need at their fingertips to essentially see around corners and know what's coming next and what's the probability function relative to the outcome. And so our mission is to reduce the reliance on the, you know, because let's be honest, it's not 10,000 hours, it's probably 30,000 hours to get to that level of expertise as a surgeon. Can we use computers where they're really good? So in knee, I would say, you tell me, that real-time three-dimensional feedback on a segmental basis, meaning different parts of the anatomy can be tracked independently without having to drill into the leg above and below the knee, that's really key. And I think that technology is here. It's a regulatory productization question, more so than can it be done reliably and better than current navigation and robotics systems. It's a question of how do you bring that to market in safe ways? How do you integrate into the workflow? What does disruption of major players like Stryker and Mako look like? It's going to happen. My prediction would be 5 years or less. And if we do it, great. There'll probably be multiple companies that'll bring it to market in different ways. So it becomes a strategy and a go-to-market question. That's going to happen in hip, in foot and ankle, in shoulder. I think those are certainties. And it's what's our certainty that the outcome we can achieve is significantly better than what's being done today. This is one of the reasons why we selected spine as the first major beachhead for this technology is, let's be honest, the outcomes are not good enough. And you probably know the numbers better than me on something like hip surgery and leg length discrepancy and revision surgeries. And can we get a spine surgery right the first time? And can we get the kind of results that you and your colleagues have started to achieve in knee surgery? You know, where a total knee replacement could be a 20-year sustainable procedure. That's not what occurs in spine today. And the NIH estimates $20 billion a year in the U.S. is spent fixing spine surgeries from failed back surgery syndrome. But if you can provide real-time intraoperative three-dimensional information about the position of the anatomy, the implants, and what we're achieving, while minimizing the damage that's done to the anatomy just to do the surgery, right? Real-time feedback, that's what we're chasing, and we're closer today than we've ever been before, and we're really excited about solving these problems in spine as well.
We're excited for you to solve them for us as well, to be perfectly honest. So here's a summary, a couple of things that I really want to just outline. One is confluence, something we talked about a fair bit at DocSF and other environments, the idea of leveraging technology developed for other things to solve problems in different fields, and doing so by integrating multiple texts. So you've got computer vision, you got optics, you've got infrared technology, and you've got gaming engines all coming to bear to solve a singular problem, which I think is really cool. Secondly, you've started by tackling soft tissue, and then you went to tackling bone, which means that inherent to your DNA, you can do both soft tissue and bone, which is not true of all other technologies on the vision side. I saw some videos promising this years ago that people could be, a surgeon could be operating on a fractured tibia and could see in their field of view where the artery was in the veins or in the nerves so that you can avoid them, which is a huge problem for us. You didn't talk about it, but this level of accuracy and the lack of the need for external markers can be powerful in the context of autonomous surgery, which at this point is still people are thinking about it, but I think we will see, and we talked about it at DocSF this year, it's 2 years from now.
Sure. Yeah, and there's this underlying question of what is the optimal collaboration between humans and computers. And I think that's a long journey for all of us as human society to explore in many different use cases. And there's fundamental questions like, is the human body the right form to mimic in robotics, or is there something better? This is also true in computing, right? Neuromorphic computing, super fascinating. It's going to be a really exciting next 2, 5, 10 years in those areas. And I think a really key aspect of the community of DocSF and all the work that you've done to build that, a very unique community, I should say, with those intersections between technology, investment, the builders who are building stuff for clinicians like you, and not just the hard tech of the robots and the instruments and the end effectors, but the software, the data, the application of the right machine learning, AI, neural networks, whatever it might be, as the right models for the right job. And that's all going to, if we do our jobs right and we collaborate through DocSF and other communities like that, it's all coalescing to a confluence, as you said, in the not so distant future. We've never been closer to this than we are right now. Just think, AI is the worst it's ever going to be today. Later today and tomorrow, it will be better. it's so invigorating and motivating to know that truth and to see it in our systems, whether it's impacting how a proprio software engineer's productivity is improved by 30, 40, 50% with these tools. And that's a real number. To what kind of impact can we have in the workflow when you do not need to use an intraoperative O-arm spin in a spine surgery? It's maybe a newsflash for some, but that's 20, 40, 60, 80 minutes of time, of blood loss, of infection risk, of physical exhaustion for a surgeon doing a really difficult physical and mentally taxing surgery. You just reduce that by an hour. Pretty damn impactful, right? And so when you start to compound all these and view that confluence as it goes forward, the probability function of the future is an exciting one. So let's pull it a little closer, a little faster through working together.
Such an exciting opportunity to speak to you, Gabe. Again, a little more extended than we did. We had an opportunity to do with DocSF. Amazing work you guys are doing. Super excited about, like I said, the leveraging of these new technologies to deliver care in ways that we simply couldn't do if just even think about a few years ago. And you're at the cutting edge of that. Thank you so much for sharing your insights, your experience, your future vision with us at the Digital Orthopedics Podcast here. And we look forward to collaborating, hear more from you, not just for at the conference, but as the year goes on. So congratulations on everything you've achieved.
Thank you so much, Stefano. And you gave us a nice call to action at the end of DocSF this year that I aim to deliver on, which is you challenged every company and the clinicians in the room to work more closely together such that every year at DocSF, we're announcing new collaborations between the companies themselves, between the clinicians and the companies and the top academic centers in the world. We heard that challenge. And I just want you to know that people are already working together in response to that challenge. And I expect to see more from the entire community next year at DocSF.
Fantastic. Thank you again.
My pleasure.
Excellent. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. This came from the DocSF sponsor series from DocSF, the Digital Orthopedics Conference, San Francisco 2025. That was our 10th year. Arguably our most successful. We are going to be hosting another DocSF in 2026 on October 2nd, also on a Friday. Look for some interesting partnerships we will be announcing in the next few months. Probably we'll have a two-day event this year to make room for all these new exciting opportunities to participate in what is arguably the most innovative and thought-provoking session in this space. We do love what we do, and it's an amazing experience. And that's why we call it that, the DocSF experience. It changes everybody's thinking after they leave. So we hope to see you there as well. Digital Orthopedics Conference, San Francisco 2026, Friday, October 2nd in San Francisco. Take care.